This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And tonight we're getting some new details about that Trump-Trudeau dinner from two people who were at the table. We are told that when Trudeau told President-elect Trump that new tariffs would kill the Canadian economy, Trump joked to him that if Canada can't survive without ripping off the U.S. to the tune of $100 billion a year, then maybe Canada should become the 51st state and Trudeau could become its governor.
So that is the type of diplomacy that is taking place at Mar-a-Lago right now. And I would have to say, at least on the surface, from a civilian like myself, that appears to be a little bit different than the way Joe Biden has been handling things as of this point in time. Let's get to our guest. I'm excited to talk to Jim Carafano. He's a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back to the show. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
I did. Yeah.
Did you get to see the grandbabies? Did you get to see the grandkids?
I did. He's pretty awesome. Yep. And now I'm in Madrid. Places.
Yeah, this is the way our show gets around the world. It's through Jim Carafano. What's your take so far on how Donald Trump's transition, like what kind of effect, he's not the president yet, 48 days until he takes the oath of office once again. What kind of effect is his transition having on our relationship with these foreign countries, including our neighbors?
Yeah, so I'll mention two things. Based on, as you know, I was in part of the Trump transition team in 2016, and it's not a reflection of me, but it's just, this is very, very different. The one thing people should never do is think about Trump as president as if it's the Donald Trump of 2016. He was president for 4 years. He has been watching world affairs, been engaged in world affairs for 4 years, and I think you should rightly expect that you're not going to see the transition like we did, I think it's in two ways we've already seen this. One is the speed and the breadth and the political astuteness of what he's done in appointing a cabinet, which does, and most importantly, I think, really reflect the movement of conservatives that help bring into power, the notion that everybody gets a voice. And I think that's really important. I think it's a team that will actually work very well together. But the other thing that we didn't see in 2016 is we did not see Trump move out with the power, because, you know, you're not the president. You can't negotiate on behalf of the United States. We only have one president at a time. Everybody knows that. But there are things that you can do to signal what you will do when you become president. That's very, very different. And we didn't see a ton of that in 2016 because he really wasn't prepared to take office, and he didn't have the global vision in particular. I mean, there were things that Trump knew he wanted to do. He went in office, like secure the border and some other things, but he didn't really have a holistic vision of how to govern that spanned both how do we make America free, safe, and prosperous, but also how to engage with the rest of the world. He has that this time, and we've seen him use that authority and power in a much, much more effective way than it did in 2016.
I mean, isn't that kind of the price that you pay when you bring in an outsider? They don't understand the bureaucracy or the systems that are in place. It's almost as if you kind of have to go through that process, at least to an extent in the initial time. But the amount of comparison that American voters and taxpayers are going to have between the system, the status quo with the Joe Biden presidency and his kind of more globalist approach to what's going on in our foreign policy. Watch here. I'm going to share this. You probably read this already, but this is a Truth Social post from Donald Trump. Everybody is talking about the hostages who are being held so violently, inhumanely, and against the will of the entire world in the Middle East. But it's all talk and no action. Please let this truth serve to represent that if the hostages are not released prior to January 20th, 2025, the date that I proudly assume office as a president of the United States, there will be all hell to pay in the Middle East. And for those in charge who perpetrated these atrocities against humanity, those responsible will be hit harder than anybody has been hit in the long and storied history of the United States of America. Release the hostages now. What do you make from that from President-elect Donald Trump?
Well, two things. One is, there is a clarity of message there about policy in the Middle East that we never got from Joe Biden, who always somehow seemed to want to straddle the powers to say, I'm not abandoning Israel, but you know, we need a two-state solution. We need to work with Gaza. I'm not going to go against the global infight. I'm not going to criticize people for wanting to destroy Israel for October 7th. So we have a clarity there of purpose that we certainly didn't have before. And again, I think it's a reflection of the Trump learning in the first term. And when you come in with a clarity of purpose and you're willing to put American power behind that, it has a dramatic effect. We also saw this, you know, for the thing with Canada, the tariffs with Canada and Mexico, Trump was very clear. He just wanted to send a crystal clear signal that Mexico and Canada are going to cooperate on border issues, particularly on the transnational drug, crime, and human trafficking things, or we're not going to be good neighbors. He sent that message loud and clear, and we immediately heard back from the leaders of both countries saying, yes, we get the message and we will work with you. That's all it took. If Joe Biden had done that, he could have probably achieved the exact same result, but he didn't. The other thing I think this shows is, so again, something we've talked a lot about in the show in the past, I think the burning dumpster fire for U.S. foreign policy, the most dangerous place right now, is the Middle East. And it is the first place where Trump has to act quickly and decisively. I don't think it's Europe. I don't think it's NATO. I don't think it's Ukraine. I think it's in the Middle East. And what we saw in that message today was a clear affirmation that the president intends to do exactly that.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano, a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. When you look at the cabinet, the appointments, the nominations that Donald Trump is assembling, especially those, you know, like a Marco Rubio, who are going to be a top diplomat on the global stage for the United States in this administration, do you feel like these appointments, especially compared to 2016, do they all have a very clear message to the American people, but also the world, as to what America is going to look like in the next 4 years?
Well, in the sense that I think we have a coherent team that reflects the breadth of what most Americans in this country want. We also, I think, have a team that's going to work well with their president, know how to work with their president. What people, I think, make a mistake is they look at individual appointments as some kind of tea leaf to say, well, this is exactly going to be our policy on this, or this is going to exactly be our policy on that. And actually, what Trump actually prefers is a diversity of views and opinions, because Trump is the decider-in-chief, and he likes to hear different views, because that's what helps him think through what is exactly the right answer. So, for example, a lot of people have looked at the appointment of Keith Kellogg, who's an old friend, by the way, and say, well, what does this tell us about the negotiations with Russia over Ukraine? I tell you exactly what it tells you. It tells you that the president's going to be in charge of the negotiations. He did not pick Keith Kellogg to tell him how to negotiate with the Russians. He picked Keith Kellogg because he's a faithful and forceful voice that for the Russians to speak to the Russians. So Keith is not driving policy. Keith is going to help the president drive policy. And I think that's what we will see with the cabinet. Mm.
Jim Carafano with us right now. NPR is the first article that I pulled up here, but says just within the last 24 hours, the United States is preparing to send Ukraine an additional $725 million in military assistance, including counter-drone systems and munitions for its high-mobility artillery rocket system. We've heard the Biden administration say, we're going to send as much money as we can, as fast as we can, before they have to turn over the reins to Donald Trump. I think conservatives get super political over this without always knowing the full details. I would be one that would be apt to do that because I'm not as educated on it. What do you want American taxpayers, you know, seeing another heap of money being sent to Ukraine, what do you want them to know about America's role with the conflict in Russia and Ukraine?
Well, the first thing is, look, first of all, this money was already voted willingly by Republicans in Congress. And Donald Trump knew that this package was on the table. And if Donald Trump wanted to oppose it during the campaign, he would have said so, and he didn't. So I think somehow filling out the military aid as somehow putting something over on Trump, I don't think that's true. And the other thing is, look, Trump wants Ukraine to be in as strong a position as possible to negotiate with the Russians. So the idea that somehow starving the Ukrainians for weapons and ammunition is going to make it easier to get the Russians to back off and stop, I mean, does that actually pass the common sense test? And I hear people talk about this. What I don't hear talking about is there are lots of things that were in those bills that Republicans 1,000% opposed and are truly egregious spending. Like, we have to spend every ounce of dollars on green energy, including billion-dollar bailouts for EV companies that are going to fail anyway. And, I mean, I think we ought to be obsessing on the things that we know Republicans never wanted to begin with. And that, by the way, when you add that money up, it dwarfs. It absolutely, completely dwarfs the spending on Ukraine. There's an enormous amount of accountability to be had for. Yeah. Much of it is in political spending. And it's not even like spending money overseas, you know, building houses in Africa. It's corruption and waste inside the United States. It's Americans stealing money. Americans stealing money from other Americans. And that ought to just really infuriate us. So sometimes I think, you know, we all have our pet, you know, thing. And here's the thing. Some people don't like the spending on Ukraine, whatever. But the thing is, we all agree that President Trump is the right guy for the job. And he wants to do exactly the right thing, which is make the war stop, because the war is not good for anybody.
When President Trump, you know, he has spoken in a way about Vladimir Putin that does not make people feel comfortable, that he's willing to have a respectable conversation with this deplorable person. Trump has said that he's going to go in and he's going to stop the conflict. Is that something that Donald Trump and American diplomacy really has the power to do?
Oh, well, we should be clear. Only Vladimir Putin has the power to stop the war, because he's the only one that can stop fighting. What Trump can do is what Joe Biden never did, which is, one, to have a plan, two, to be willing to really tell Putin there are serious consequences for what you're doing, and if you don't stop, you will suffer those consequences. And I am not going to be scared off by you and your threats. It's just not going to happen. I'm not worried about World War III starting, because if you're facing the full power of America, you are not going to start World War III. You are going to go hide somewhere. I also think he's the one guy that can turn to the Ukrainians and say, and the Europeans, and say, you need to be realistic about what's achievable, what can be done, and the burden that you're going to have to share to make sure there's not future wars in Europe. The reason why there was a war in the second invasion of Ukraine was because after the first invasion of Ukraine in 2014, we did nothing. Deals don't end wars. It's what you do after the deal is signed, after the shooting stops, that ends the next war. We had this agreement with the Russians. We did nothing to enforce the Russians. Matter of fact, we bent over backwards. Europe tried to build Nord Stream 2. They tried to do business with the Russians. They didn't care if the Russians... They sent them every single signal that we're not really serious about stopping you again. And so we invaded again. So it's not just getting a deal, which everybody focuses on. Everybody thinks the deal is a big deal. It's not. It's what you're going to do the day after the deal. And the one thing I think we can trust Donald Trump on, if he says fighting's going to stop, and if it does stop, I'm going to do this, and then there won't be another war. And if you don't stop, you know, we should look at it this way. If you want to see how Trump negotiates, look at the Look at the deal he just put on the table for Hamas and the hostages.
Yeah.
That's the kind of deal the Russians are going to get.
Well, it's a new day, and we're looking forward to that 48 days from now when the status quo changes. But it does seem like he's getting a jump start on it, and his words are pretty clear on his True Social. He gets to speak directly to the people. And, Jim, we always appreciate you coming and making some clarity of these issues for us as well. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, you should play that song. It's a new day, it's a new dawn, and I'm feeling fine.
Yeah, like that. I'm feeling good. We will. I would like your version of it, though. We'll come into your next segment with it. So you just, you know, sing it out, record it in your phone. It'll be chef's kiss. Yeah, we'd love to have that.
That is not happening.
If it does, though, you send it to us. Jim, take
you'll
care.
Get an exclusive.
Take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Can you imagine that? Jim Carafano, Michael Bublé mashup. We'll take it here on the Andy Fry Show. All right, quick break. When we come back, Mike Davis, another fiery guest that we're going to have on here next. We're going to talk about the Hunter Biden. We're going to talk about Cash Patel. We're going to talk about Donald Trump's clear focus for what he wants to do starting on day one. How will Senate Republicans react to the people who Donald Trump wants to do what he has committed to the American people he will do if they elected him? And they did. We'll talk to Mike Davis, the founder and president of the Article 3 Project, next. Don't go away.
He and his White House spokespersons promised the American people they wouldn't pardon Hunter Biden. But not only did he lie to them about that, look at the scope of the pardon. It's far beyond the offenses for which he was convicted. It's any crime he committed whatsoever for 11 years, which raises the question, what crimes does Joe Biden think his son has been committing for the last decade plus?
Yeah, will we ever even know Senator Tom Cotton there talking about this very broad 10-year pardon from Joe Biden? Promised he wouldn't do it. I don't think any of us believed it. But why was this pardon so incredibly broad? Let's go to Mike Davis to get his thoughts. He's the founder and president of the Article 3 Project. He's also a former chief counsel for nominations at the United States Senate Committee on the Judiciary. Mike Davis, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
The Hunter Biden pardon, I don't know if you were surprised by the actual act of the pardon, but what did you think about the breadth of what Joe Biden provided for his son?
Well, it was very obvious that Joe Biden was not only pardoning his son Hunter, but he was also covering his own butt, because this pardon clearly coincides with Hunter Biden joining Burisma's board and the Biden family corruption, where House Oversight Chairman James Comer has been able to find bank records evidencing $23 million and counting from these corrupt foreign entities and actors into what seems like every Biden family member's bank accounts, except for the six-year-old granddaughter who they don't claim. But it's amazing. What were the Bidens selling for this $23 million? Was it Hunter Biden's artistic talent? Was it his geopolitical knowledge of Russia and Ukraine? Or could it be they were selling access to the vice president of the United States?
And very important questions that I still think the American people deserve answers to. Some have suggested, I think you've commented on this as well, that Joe Biden might have been trying to offer himself coverage through this pardon. Is Joe Biden going to receive that coverage through the pardon that he extended so broadly, trying to keep Hunter Biden out of court, away from potentially having to face legal challenges? Does that provide legal cover for Joe as well?
I would say to Joe Biden that while he's pardoning the Hunter family turkeys, he should also include himself and the rest of these Biden family members who were the recipients of this $23 million and counting. And I would also say this, that be careful what you get here, because now that you've pardoned Hunter Biden, he can no longer assert his Fifth Amendment right to against self-incrimination, and he could be called before grand juries in Congress and not be able to get out of it. And if he doesn't cooperate, if Hunter doesn't cooperate after this pardon, he could be held in contempt and he could be charged with perjury if he lies. And so I think that the House of Representatives, the House Intel Committee, Judiciary Committee, the Oversight Committees need to issue subpoenas immediately for Hunter Biden and bring him in. This is so much bigger than Hunter Biden's hookers and blow. This is about a president of the United States that has been compromised, and what has the President of the United States sold out for this $23 million to our family? This has serious national security implications.
We're speaking with Mike Davis, the founder and president of the Article 3 Project. You can learn more at article3project.org and support Mike Davis and his team's efforts there. The investigation into Hunter Biden, it's not lost on me that we see a nomination of Kash Patel as the FBI director, and then, like, almost reflexively, we see a pardon that we were promised wasn't going to happen. We see a pardon of Hunter Biden. Are those connected at all, do you think?
Well, I think that these Democrats understand that Pam Bondi as Trump's attorney general and Kash Patel as Trump's FBI director are going to be bold, serious, highly competent reformers who are going to go in and restore justice to the Justice Department. And that means getting rid of the corruption that's there. The biggest corruption in all of the federal governments is the corrupted, broken FBI. And between the 1-2 punch of Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, I think they're going to get that agency back in line over the next 4 years.
It'll be very interesting to see how these confirmations go through. You've been bold on this as well. Donald Trump was elected resoundingly by the American people. He has been very clear about what he wants to do, and that we want to have a change election. And the American people said, yes, we do too. Kash Patel, a lot of energy around that appointment. I saw Andy McCabe freaking out about it. Do you think he's going to make it through the confirmation process?
There's no question. I promise President Trump that if he picks Kash Patel, the Article 3 Project will do everything we can to get Kash Patel confirmed. This is not my first rodeo. People said that Kavanaugh couldn't be confirmed, and then I pulled the rabbit out of the hat and got him confirmed. And I'm going to do the same thing with Kash Patel, and Kash Patel should be confirmed. He is a highly qualified, highly skilled national security official. He's been a public defender. He's been a national security prosecutor. He won awards from the Obama Justice Department for this. He was a top aide on the House Intel Committee. He was a top aide in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the Chief of Staff at the Pentagon, the White House National Security Council. There's no question he's qualified, and he's not going to be disqualified through personal baggage, right? If a president's executive branch pick is qualified, the Senate has to confirm them unless that senator can prove that he's disqualified with clear and convincing evidence. That's not going to happen with Kash. He's had the highest security clearances you can get, top secret, secure compartmented information, special access programs, TSSCI, SAP. You're not going to find skeletons in Kash's closet. And so the Senate's going to confirm him. The Article 3 Project is going to make damn sure that happens. And then Kash Patel is going to be a serious, bold reformer at the FBI.
We're speaking with the founder and president of the Article 3 Project, Mike Davis, right now. You've given me a lot of reasons to understand exactly why Kash Patel is completely qualified in his experience, but also through his appointment, his nomination, I should say, of Donald Trump to be the FBI director. How do you summarize what is so frightening to the left, to the Andy McCabes of the world? What is Kash Patel going to do that has the people on that far fringe left so frightened by the possibility that he could truly be confirmed?
What terrifies the Uniparty is Kash Patel is a highly qualified, highly skilled, competent operator and loyalist to President Trump, as he should be. Every executive branch appointee should be loyal to the president and his policy agenda and carry out his lawful orders. To argue otherwise makes the case that that there's a deep state, something that they say is a conspiracy theory, but then they're arguing that the attorney general and the FBI director should not be accountable to the president. That's the very definition of a deep state. So it's not a conspiracy if that's your argument, right? And what I think they are terrified of with Kash Patel is he's already proven that he's effective. He's the one who helped uncover Crossfire Hurricane, the biggest scandal in American history, and he's going to fully expose that as the FBI director.
If Kash Patel is to be confirmed, Do you feel like the American people are going to get some truths? We've been living in 4 years of conservatives specifically. We're not even supposed to ask questions. We weren't supposed to ask questions about COVID. We're not supposed to be able to ask questions about what materialized on January 6th. We don't know anything about the Jeffrey Epstein list. That was just like, hey, we took care of it. We're moving on. Puff Daddy, whatever his name is now, he's got a whole scandal around him. Do you think that the American people are going to be privy to the actual truth and facts wherever they fall if this Trump cabinet gets put into place?
Yes, because you're going to have the 1-2 punch of Pam Bondi as AG and Kash Patel as the FBI director. And then you're going to have the secret weapon. My former boss, Senator Chuck Grassley, the former and returning chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who will work hand in glove with Pam and Kash again. And they're going to expose this corruption within the Justice Department, particularly at the FBI, particularly the biggest scandal in American history, Crossfire Hurricane. There's going to be transparency. There's going to be accountability.
Mike Davis, do you think that when you're surveying the 53 Republicans in the Senate that will be responsible, the Democrats can do whatever the Democrats want. If the Republicans are loyal to President Trump, all of these confirmations should get through. Are there any areas, any senators specifically, that you have great concern are not going to play ball with Donald Trump?
No, I don't. In the Article 3 Project, if your listeners and viewers go to article3project.org, article3project.org, go to take action. And one of the action items is Kash Patel for FBI director. And this site makes it very easy for you to call both of your home state senators, to send them emails, and to light them up on social media. We've already run a shock and awe campaign at the Article 3 Project on Kash Patel's nomination. And people said that this nominee had a snowball's chance in hell 3 days ago. They're not saying that anymore. It looks like it went from a snowball's chance in hell to inevitable.
Last question before we let you go, and Mike Davis, we're very grateful for your time today. The Hunter Biden pardon, Joe Biden's wide pardon that he provided his son, do you think that that gives any headwind to Donald Trump's ability to pardon maybe the J6ers, other people who might have been at the unfortunate hand of this unbalanced Justice Department?
Absolutely. All Trump has to do is look at Joe Biden's statement that Hunter Biden was somehow a victim of a politicized and weaponized Biden Justice Department. And Trump can use that same standard to pardon almost all of the January 6th defendants, as he should, commute the sentences for the rest, because nothing happened on January 6th that calls for 22 years in prison for anyone.
Amen.
Especially when they let BLM, their riots that were a hell of a lot more deadly and destructive than anything that happened on January 6th.
Well, it's article3project.org. And if you are motivated by Mike Davis's words here, I've retweeted your post on X here where you link to that effort to make sure that Kash Patel is supported across the country by the senators across the country. Mike Davis, thank you for your time today. We look forward to seeing Donald Trump's cabinet be approved.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's good to have you. Mike Davis, the founder and president of the Article 3 Project, he has served in Washington, D.C. in many capacities, and he is now a foot soldier to make sure that Donald Trump gets the team that he needs in order to carry out what he promised the American people he would do. You know, I always go back to Barack Obama's hope and change commitment and promise in 2008. He delivered on that. He really changed, fundamentally transformed the United States of America. And I really, truly believe that the 2024 election was the repudiation of that and saying, put it back. Yeah, you know, has progress been made since 2008? It really depends on how you define progress. But when Donald Trump tells the American people what he wants to do, he's very open and honest about it in this campaign. And you have the A and B comparison of a Donald Trump presidency and a Joe Biden presidency. And people say, we choose Trump. We have to give him the tools he needs in order to carry out what he's promised the American people that he will do. The Democratic obstruction, it's not going to happen for 2 years. And then after that, Lord knows what will take place in the midterms. These appointments, they are going to need to get through in order for Donald Trump to do what he needs to do. You can vote in today's YouTube live chat poll. Will Trump's cabinet be confirmed? All of it, most of it, or some of it, if you go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come say hi, subscribe to the channel, vote in the poll, leave a comment if you so choose. Let's take a quick break. Ryan Wiggins back in studio here in just a minute. More Annie Fry Show right around the corner. Vote in that poll. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Jim Carafano and Mike Davis in the same hour. I like that hour. I'm afraid we're going to ruin it.
And now this. Have you heard that? If you heard that time check, you know that this is not going to be as good a content as you just heard from those two guests.
It's all a matter of perspective.
Yep.
Okay. A Democratic lawmaker is moving to force a vote on releasing the results of the House Ethics Committee report on former Matt Gaetz, Congressman Matt Gaetz.
Okay.
Guess who? Representative Sean Casten of Illinois introduced legislation on Tuesday afternoon aimed at mandating a House-wide vote on whether to make the Gaetz report public. He introduced it as a privileged resolution, a mechanism that forces House leaders to consider it within two legislative days, putting the deadline on Thursday. Casten is a Northern Illinois, I think Quad Cities, but Jeannie Ives was challenged him a couple cycles ago. Got pretty close, but didn't beat him.
Isn't the point of an internal investigation that it's internal? I mean, I guess it's the people's house, so I understand that. But he's not a House member, so I don't know.
That just means to me that they're worried about what he's going to do next, and I'm at least curious.
Yeah.
Fox News reports the House Ethics Committee's multi-year investigation into Gaetz involving allegations of sex with a minor and illicit drug use came to an abrupt halt last month after he resigned from Congress hours after President-elect Donald Trump tapped him to be his attorney general. That was such a wild but short ride. You know when you ride a roller coaster and it's pretty crazy, but it's like very short?
Mm-hmm. Like Tron.
Yeah. It's just like Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz is Tron.
I think Matt Gaetz would be okay with that comparison.
Yeah, it's a Florida thing. I don't know what Matt Gaetz is going to do next, but I've always felt like the way to squash the ethics report, which what I think is likely to come out of the ethics report, is maybe he didn't do anything illegal, but he definitely participated in things that voters would consider potentially in Florida to be unethical. And if it's unethical, that hurts his future opportunities in politics, maybe to be the governor of the state of Florida, whatever might be next on his to-do list. I don't think Attorney General was ever on it. I think that Donald Trump had fun with that one and did a little trolling. And I said that at the time, and I stick with that. But if you know, the Justice Department investigated him and dropped any charges, he was not ever charged with anything, and that investigation was closed. There are a lot of things that happen, not just in politics, folks, in every industry, walk of life, where people do things that are unethical but not illegal. And that matters to voters. I'll be honest. I want to know what's in the report.
Yeah, I do too. Only because if he were saying, I'm resigning, I'm done, I'm going back to private life, whatever, I'd say, fine, just leave it alone then. But if he's going to run again, I think that stuff does need to be known.
Marco Rubio's seat's still open, right?
Yeah. You thinking Gaetz is a possibility for that?
I don't think that Ron DeSantis has an affinity for Gaetz. That's just an assumption.
I don't think so either.
So I don't think that that is likely. But, I mean, it's still open. It's still for consideration. Matt Gaetz is closer to being the Attorney General of the United States than most people ever will be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for him to be able to peddle the idea that he could be the senator, I don't even think I hear. I mean, that's a possibility, but I don't ever hear people really seriously discussing that. The thing that I've heard many times from people, both like publicly on television and in private conversations I've had with people who are connected to the situation, is that he wants to be the governor. And Ron DeSantis will be termed out after 2 years. I mean, how do you run for governor in 2 years? People aren't going to just forget that the ethics report exists and be like, meh, never mind.
Right. And look, regardless of whether it's the ethics report or whatever, if somebody runs for an office that's going to affect a lot of people, which in this case, the governor of Florida would affect a lot of people, and is a platform for more things. I mean, I hope we see more from DeSantis because of that platform. But if you are going to run for that level of office, and you have allegations against you of improprieties with a minor, that needs to be fully vetted.
Yeah.
Why would you not want to know that stuff?
It seems to me like the way it shakes out, This is just a guess. This is my, what's the most, is it Rorschach test? Like the what's, or no?
Yeah, the ink blot text test.
Is that where what's most obvious is true? That's something else.
That's something else, yeah.
Occam's razor?
Occam's razor.
Is that he had a relationship under circumstances that conservative America is not going to love, but maybe she lied about her age or something like that. Like maybe the understanding I have about the girl who was involved when she was 17, he's not going to be the first person who had a relationship of that kind with a 17-year-old who didn't openly be like, I'm a minor, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, does that make it okay and good? No. Like, does it, the illegalities of it, maybe there's some information there that there was some deception or something involved, I don't know, that makes it not illegal. I don't know. But voters aren't going to look at that and go, if the situation is true that he was using substances and having all night parties with 17-year-old girls, voters aren't like, he's my guy. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm just speaking personally. If any politician that I would vote for, especially in a primary, because that's where you really are deciding, is in a primary.
In Florida,
where you know where the Republican's probably going to win at this point. If you're voting for somebody to primary, and I've heard, let's say the girl was 18. Let's say that it was legal and all legally okay, and he's 35 or whatever, and he's 35 and he's partying and having sex with 18-year-old borderline illegal activity, that, to me, sways my vote. And it's all legal, but it still sways my vote.
Because it's morally and ethically
wrong. Because I just don't like it,
yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you have other choices in the primary, and in Florida, the primary will probably be the election, but you never know. Ron DeSantis won his first election by just a sliver, and he was not supposed to beat, was it Andrew Gillum?
Andrew Gillum. I almost said Doug Burgum again for no reason.
No, don't
but
put him in there.
But it was Andrew Gillum.
There's only one photograph I can think of his.
Oh, man.
Going back to the reason why these are morally unethical detractors when it comes to an election process, like, it just would be, if any of that stuff is true, it's an unforced error. He has never been charged with anything. Charges were dropped, which is why I feel like the ethics report, I believe that he dropped out of Congress, he resigned to stop the ethics report from happening. And I said that on day one, and I still believe that to be the case. I don't know why he wouldn't be like, release it. There's nothing there. Obviously, there's something there.
Right.
Do you want to see the report, Brad?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like all the points you guys made about if he's planning on running for office, if he's planning on doing all that stuff. Yeah, let's see the ethics report. Tell us what's there. Let's see if there's any there about the salacious accusations that have been made against him. And you make a really good point. It's like, if you want to, you know, if there's nothing there, then say, yeah, go ahead and release it.
I would want to clear my name.
Yes.
I think that's why he dropped. I thought this process of him running and maybe being the AG was going to take longer. I think we all did. Even if it was a stunt, it was not going to be a one-week stunt. And so it seems to me like he dropped out of that because they were talking about possibly releasing it again, even though he was in the running, because he was in the running for AG. So I would be surprised if he doesn't come out soon, if they're going to possibly, you know, this is just one person, so it doesn't mean it's going to happen. But if it looks like the House actually could release this, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out and says, I'm not going to run for office anymore. Because it just keeps happening where it's about to come out, and then he makes an announcement.
Vicky says, I want 100% transparency in everything for everyone, no matter political party. If this, the real test here for your own internal ethical approach to wanting an ethics report to come out on Matt Gaetz, if this was Eric Swalwell's ethics report, would you want to know? Heck yes, you'd want to know.
Yeah.
If it was AOC, if it was any squad member, if it was Hakeem Jeffries, the guy who's in charge of the party, if it was Nancy Pelosi, wouldn't you want to know it? Of course you would. Let it speak the truth that your investigation has discovered, and then let the American people decide. So, I don't know.
Ender says,
yes.
Yearly ethics investigations on everyone?
Go for it.
Yeah, why not? Although, then you're going to politicize those, so.
Yeah.
Sounds nice.
I mean, they're politicizing things that didn't even happen to begin with. That's why, you know, I just feel, I don't feel the compulsion that some people feel on the right to protect Matt Gaetz.
totally fair.
The truth should protect Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, eh, there's got to be someone else in Florida that can run for office, don't you think?
Seems like there's a few good
people.
A few good men down there.
What about the women?
They're fine, too. Pam Bondi.
Fine.
I mean, good.
Maybe even superior.
I wouldn't say that.
Let's go to break. We'll be right back.